good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of FBC Radio Live. It is NFL Draft Week. That's right, Monday, April 25th. I almost said October for some reason, but it is April 25th. That means the draft kicks off this Thursday, and it's about damn time. Let's just put it that way. I'm kind of getting sick of all the buildup towards it. I just want to get to the event and get it over with. So it's going to be a pretty exciting week here on FPC Radio Live, and of course over at fullpresscoverage.com, where we have six official FPC mock drafts out. We will be sharing them from the @FullPressNFL Twitter account later today. So if you missed any of them, if you want to go back in time before several of these trades happened and look at what we were thinking, then you can check it out. Then, of course, we're going to be having a bunch of live coverage on Thursday as well. But, John, before we get to that, the Boston Celtics are up 3-0 on the Brooklyn Nets. And I'll tell you what, I know the games have ended close, but correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like the Celtics have essentially dominated the series for much of these last three games.
Yeah, they really have. I mean, on Saturday night, they got up 13 late, and then Brooklyn hit a couple of threes late to make it closer.
In like the final minute and a half, yeah. That game should have probably been a blowout.
Right, and then game two, Brooklyn got out to that big lead. Then from that point on, the Celtics dominated. Game one was obviously the best game of the series, and it almost has a feel, Ian, a little bit, again, being the old guy, let me go back to 1988, but the Dodgers and A's met in the World Series, and the A's were a powerhouse, and the Dodgers, we were still trying to figure out how the hell they got in there. They were down a run in the bottom of the ninth, and Kirk Gibson hit that famous home run to win the game for the Dodgers, and it seemed like from that point forward, the series was over. You almost get the feeling now that after game one with the great finish by the Celtics, mm-hmm. that the Celtics took complete control of that series after game one. Now, I know they got down 17 in game two, but in the NBA, 17-point deficits are erasable because of the three-point shooting. And we've seen it in many series. I mean, you know, the other night, Miami was up nearly 20, ended up losing. Minnesota had a 26-point lead over Memphis and lost. So we see it. But the Celtics' calling card is defense. So you can get also back from a deficit by playing great defense, which they do. They're the best defensive team in basketball, and that's even without Rob Williams, who played limited minutes on Saturday night.
He looked good, too, when he was out there. It's funny. You see him out on the court after missing him these last few games or last month or so, and you realize just how much bigger he is, if there's one thing that the Celtics were lacking was kind of that big presence, right in the middle. And it seems like they have it now. And look, I mean, we talked about this after game one, and I said this to you, I can't remember if it was on or off the air, but in the past, the Celtics lose game one. That's a game where they get up big and then they blow the lead. And that's something they cannot overcome, and the reason that they were able to do that has been the common denominator in these three games. The Celtics are unflappable, at least against Brooklyn. Every single time Brooklyn made a run, it did not matter. And in years past, we've seen this. Celtics fans who have watched this team, particularly this version, with the Jays, Tatum and Brown and kind of this version of the Celtics, post Big Three. You could consider them mentally weak at times. Mm-hmm. And certainly when, you blow a double digit lead like they did in game one, that's a cause for concern, because then you start to see them pressing. Then you start to see them make mistakes down the stretch. And then eventually the game ends and, you end up losing in five games to the Nets like you did last year. This year it's different. You've seen them blow leads. You've seen them hold leads. You've seen Brooklyn, make their best attempt to come back. And the Celtics are just like, nah, we're good. We'll let you get close. But as soon as you get close, we're just going to take it over again. Like, how many times did they get within three? And then you blink, right, and it was 7-8-point lead again for the Celtics.
Exactly. Yeah, big stop or big basket. And it's, again, the growth of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
And look, Jason Tatum didn't even have a great, efficient night shooting.
He hasn't. He hasn't in the series, but he's doing everything else.
Yeah, the timing of how well he shoots and, to your point, what he's doing outside of shooting, the passing, the defense, I mean, everything is, it's, again, it makes you forget that, I mean, good God, if he actually, you know, gets to the point where, like, I mean, game four might be a game where maybe he is on, and that might not be even a close contest for the Nets.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's just growing as a player. And, you know, I know he's got top five talent. He's not quite in the top five yet because there's only five guys in the top five, and there's still some guys that are better, but he's ascending to the point where in 2 years, he'll be the discussion with Luka and Giannis as the three best players in basketball. That's my opinion.
And look, I mean, sometimes it's not even necessarily Tatum's fault. Like you said, I mean, there's just other guys ahead of him. It's my mentality when it comes to quarterbacks. It's like, yeah, I mean, in the NFL, yeah, you could have a great season, but unless that guy at the top has a bad season, I'm not going to elevate you over it. So that's kind of the same thing. But yeah, anyone who watches Jason Tatum play, obviously not only sees a lot of Kobe Bryant, I mean, and for obvious reasons, I mean, just some of the style in which he plays and everything, obviously a big Kobe fan growing up and all that stuff. So that's not surprising. What's surprising is he's starting to play with the efficiency and the ability to that level. Not quite. I mean, again, we're not sitting there telling you he's the greatest basketball player. But when you watch a kid this young evolve over the course of the last few seasons, and then, of course, now see, you know, a team that I saw someone tweet this, and again, this if it wasn't for that LeBron James narrative that's been floating around here, it may be the worst narrative that's being pushed. It's that no one wanted to play Brooklyn, and I'm sitting here thinking, like, no, the one team that wanted to play Brooklyn played Brooklyn, and is currently up 3-0. And that's when you look at the Celtics team and the growth. It'd be tough to say that the growth that they're going through right now, just in these last few weeks, are more than what we've seen over the last 4 seasons.
Oh, without question. I mean, in early January, they were sub 500. They were a 500 team last year. They looked like they were going to make major trades at the trade deadline. Maybe Jaylen Brown was going to get moved. Maybe Ime Udoka's job was in peril. And they just flipped it. They really did. I think getting rid of Dennis Schroeder was a great move. I thought he was just a bad fit on this team. And then Marcus Smart, who I've not been a big fan of in the past, but I'm changing. I think that's what you have to do sometimes when
he's evolved his game.
He's evolved his game, so I'm going to evolve my opinion of him. That's the way it works. I'm not one of these people that says, oh, I just don't like him, so I'm going to continue to knock him. He's evolved his game. It's almost as if he looked in the mirror and says, I'm a point guard now. I'm going to play defense. I'm going to be a facilitator. He's the best passer on the team. I can drive to the basket. I got great chemistry with Rob Williams. Let me set up Tatum and Brown and yada, 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 and all that stuff. And when he decided to do that, because he does have the biggest personality on the team, he's been here the longest. It seems like everybody follows.
No pun intended. He's a very smart basketball player. Even when, you know, again, some of his, you know, sometimes you can be a little bit too smart for your own good. And
oh, I know that. I'm like that in life sometimes.
Yeah, there you go. Well, and if you think about it, that was kind of, you know, Marcus's problem. It's like, you know, we go back to game one, and it's like 100 times out of 100, he takes that shot.
Yes.
And then he didn't. And then all of a sudden, you're like, wow, he made a very, and this wasn't a, this was a very thought, you know, you listen to him talk about it after the game, you know, very well thought out. Originally, I think he said he was looking for Horford, and then he saw Tatum cutting, and look, I mean, that's what you want to see, and that's what all of a sudden, like, you know, like I said, I mentioned that narrative earlier that, oh, LeBron beat the state. This is not the same 2000, you know. I know there's similarities with Smart, Brown, Tatum, and Horford, but this is not that 2018 season. I think every one of those players are better, except save for maybe Al Horford, only because he's gotten older, but you'd be hard-pressed to tell me that he isn't a perfect player to come off the bench and give you some quality minutes. Not only that, but make some really big plays both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, the thing of Marcus Smart evolving, and I've also seen Jason Tatum evolve. Now, again, like you said, he hasn't been efficient in this series. He's averaging 30 a game, but not shooting at the level that we know he can. But he's also rebounding. Mm-hmm. He's had a ton of assists. He had 6 steals the other night. He's playing great defense. And he's going mano a mano oftentimes against Kevin Durant, and he's doing a great job about that. And in the past, I always thought that, you know, he was always kind of sheepish around these other great players, like, I want to be Kevin Durant, and I idolize Kyrie. Well, now he knows he's as good as those guys. And we saw a play on Saturday night, Ian, where Durant got called for the offensive foul. He just kind of put his shoulder into Tatum and knocked him down. And Tatum was on the floor, saw that it was an offensive call. And the look on his face, and he started clapping, he looked intense, which is not something you think of with Jason Tatum. It's almost like, again, something's happened to this entire team as a team and individually where they've just kind of like gone in a different direction. It's truly amazing. You don't really see this often in sports. There's usually a gradual climb. With this, it's like a year and a half of underachieving and playing 500 ball and frustrating to watch, and then boom, it just happened.
All of a sudden, they're and that's the thing. It's like, this has been, what, we're talking 40 games now of high-level elite basketball that just doesn't seem like it's going to waver. Like I said, I mean, I know these games are close, and some people are arguing that, oh, you know, the Nets weren't in this. I mean, look, I'm not even, like, I've never sat here and pretended like I'm some basketball expert, but even a casual fan, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, I just mean it as someone who doesn't pay attention every single day of the season, I mean, Steve Nash is getting, I mean, it looks like he's going up against a D-League defender in his prime right now, but he's the D-League defender. I mean, I don't know what his role is coaching or what he does. I know it's difficult. I know you're probably dealing with a lot of ego when it comes to Durant and of course, Kyrie. But he's been out-coached at every level. And look, you mentioned it. I think we talked about it maybe off the air. But one of the things Ime is doing better is the timeouts that he's taking. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've been far better timed. I mean, like, we saw, what was it, Brooklyn went on a run on Saturday where they hit a couple shots. And in the past, Ime would just literally let it sit. And it's frustrating because it's like, all right, you got to do something. You got to calm these guys down. Boom, timeout completely killed that run for Brooklyn. Right. And the timing was great. And obviously, you can't praise the Celtics defense without, you know, giving credit to the coach. Because, again, you got to put the system in place for them to run it, and they're running it to such a high level that it's impressive.
And there's the buy-in. That's a big part of coaching in the NBA. Oh, sure. They will follow you, right? And you look at Steve Nash, a great player, two-time MVP, you know, played like professional soccer. He's a great soccer fan. He's a huge tennis guy. He was playing tennis, and they kind of pulled him off the tennis court and said, hey, you want to coach the Nets? And he's like, sure, $7 million a year, I'll do it. And he had no coaching experience. So, you know, I don't know if he gives much to his assistants to do. And again, Kyrie Irving famously said before last year, well, we really don't need a coach. We're the coaches. Well, okay. But now Kyrie, after game three, is kind of calling out his coaching staff saying that the Celtics have offensive and defensive sets, and Brad Stevens is a great executive. And, like, again, Kyrie is, you know, certainly entertaining to listen to, but sometimes you need to listen a couple of times to what he says to get his message. It's kind of like reading Shakespeare. And it's frustrating if you're a Nets fan, if there are any out there. I don't know if there are. But, the Celtics. And here's the thing, too, is that my only concern going into the playoffs, Ian, was the Celtics this year were 5-15 in games decided by five or fewer points. So it was like they were just blowing teams out, but they would lose some close games. And you just assume that there'd be close games in this series. You know, game one, they win by one. Game two, they win by seven. Game three, they win by six. So they're like you said, when Brooklyn makes a run, the Celtics counter it with either a big defensive stop or a bucket on the other end. And it's just been fascinating to watch. And right now, you know what? I'll make this case that they're the best team in basketball. They're the only team that can sweep the first round of this playoffs. And they're playing a team that was favored over them. I mean, the one series we all agreed was going to be like this fascinating 6 or 7 game series going to be Boston, Brooklyn. Well, that may be the only sweep if they wrap it up tonight. You know, and meanwhile, Phoenix is 2-2 with New Orleans, and Memphis is 2-2 with Minnesota. And
Denver managed to win a game yesterday, so they're only down 3-1 only.
Right.
But again, John, that's kind of like, you know, what was it? Toronto went out of their way to avoid Brooklyn. I mean, teams lost on purpose to
Milwaukee.
I was thinking Blue Jays for some reason because the Red Sox are heading up to Toronto. Yeah, Milwaukee, and it's like, look, no one's going to sit here and pretend like Milwaukee's a pretender. No, I mean, I think everyone believes that Milwaukee is certainly a a very easy candidate for to win the championship. But just that alone kind of speaks to, and that's what I'm saying about the Celtics team. It's different. Not you know, we're not you know, they're different from everyone else. No, this is different from previous Celtics teams.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not saying they would have shied away from it, but they wouldn't have welcomed the competition and then come out and have their play match that confidence. Like, that's right. The thing. Their confidence in being able to beat Brooklyn has been matched by their play on the court. And not all, that's not always the case. Trust me, a lot of people come in plenty confident and don't back it up. The Celtics have been doing that.
Yeah, like Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan until they get punched, especially if it happens on an airplane.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've just accepted all the challenges. And now you look that was a good maneuver. Obviously, they're going to win this series. Hopefully, they wrap it up tonight and get some rest and get ready for the next series. Milwaukee's going to beat Chicago. So you're going to play Milwaukee in the second round, which you would have no matter what happened. But now you have home court advantage,
mm-hmm.
you know, which can be the difference between these two teams. And also, Chris Middleton, who is Milwaukee's second best player, may not play in that series. So things are breaking right for the Celtics as well, who are healthy, especially now that Rob Williams is back.
Well, and what, let's, you know, let's just say it too. This team is talented. Like in the past, like,
oh, hell yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They've we've talked about them overachieving, and sometimes you're like, yeah, they're playing great right now, but eventually they're going to hit a wall. No, this team is not only obviously playing great basketball, but it's relative and it's appropriate to the level of talent that they have on this team. So it isn't a matter of over the Nets are just playing bad. Like, they're forcing the Nets to play poorly. Kevin Durant, yeah, he struggled, but a lot of that is because of the Celtics. I mean, he hit a couple nice shots early on last night, but then what did they do? They made sure he didn't have a damn inch to move. Guess what?
He really had. They've crowded him. Yeah,
and absolutely. And that's the thing. Like I. You watch this team, you like the defense, you like the effort, and you look for the little things that in years past would have maybe been a sign of disaster. And that, like I said, is blowing those leads and maybe being, overachieving. You know, that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's fine for a young team. I mean, if you overachieve, that kind of just gives you a little bit early taste of what could be some success. And maybe those Eastern Conference, again, part of it was the nature of the conference. I mean, let's not forget what the conference was 4 or 5 years ago. It was basically Cleveland and a bunch of, what, 6, 7, 8 seeds vying for through 15?
It was for 8 years, it was the LeBron Invitational.
Yeah.
He won.
Well, I'm more so, you know, the I'd say his second run in Cleveland, especially towards the end, where – like, even Milwaukee wasn't Milwaukee. You know, Giannis wasn't
not
Giannis.
Yet, right.
Philly was, I think they were in the process, so they were right in the mix for a top six. So there really wasn't that team outside of Cleveland. So, yeah, it opened the door for a Celtics team to overachieve, and that's fine. But this time, if they make it to the conference finals, they deserve to be there. Not that they didn't before, but you know what I mean. Like, their talent and their ability match where they're reaching at this point.
And I think look at the road.
Yeah.
Look at the road they'd have to go through. Brooklyn, which mm-hmm. we agree is not a 7 seed when you have those two players. Then Milwaukee, who happens to be the defending champ, although they may be without their second best player. Then if they get through Milwaukee, they're going to play either Miami, which was the 1 seed,
mm-hmm.
or a talented Philly team. And then if they get to the finals, in all likelihood, just for argument's sake, probably Golden State, who's healthy and playing at a high level right now. Yeah, there's normally in the NBA, especially if you're the 2 seed in your conference, you get a layup in the first round. And actually, the Celtics have made it kind of look like a layup if they sweep them. But they're sweeping a damn talented duo in Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, who, you know, again, I think they look frustrated. And they look like they've kind of given some quit there, right?
You saw that play, Kevin Durant. Obviously, there's a miscommunication there on the baseline or right on the 3-point line there in the corner, and he just gave the ball away. And you saw Kai, and you know, those are the things. It's like, okay, this is what happens when you have two egos, one of which is very thin skinned, the other one is, I mean, I don't know, with Kyrie,
a little crazy,
yeah. So. Like that's not going to be good. And then all of a sudden, that's why you get these, you know, not so subtle shots at coaching and everything now that they know that the writing's on the wall, you know? So,
they're going to just essentially, you know, throw Steve Nash under the bus. He'll be gone. They'll bring in some other guy to coach at the approval of Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. I mean, Kyrie Irving can opt out after this year. Who the hell knows with him? He generally stays in a place for 2 or 3 years. I mean, I'm not, this is not completely nuts to think this, that he ends up back with LeBron in LA. I mean, I don't know how the contracts and the mechanisms would work, but, you know, things could get done. That wouldn't shock me. I mean, that, you know, the best trade in the history of the NBA, how would this be? It's not going to happen, but it would be fascinating. Is Kyrie to the Lakers for Russell Westbrook. Oh. So you reunite Kyrie with LeBron and you reunite Westbrook with Durant. I mean, that's the NBA. That's the drama they create.
Yeah, and fortunately, I like it when no matter what, you know, those teams like that may not necessarily work out. You know what's funny, John? And I know there's everything about big threes. More often than not, they don't work. Like, think about it. Like, for the last 15 years, let's go back to 2007, when this idea of putting together this big three, I mean, it really took off when the Celtics made the trades to bring in Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett. That's when big three really came back into the basketball, just lexicon, I guess you want to call it. It really hasn't worked as, I mean, look, the Celtics won in their first year, and they're the only team that's done that. I mean, if you want to say, well, Golden State, well, again, Golden State had already won, brought in Kevin. You know, it was a little bit different. I'm talking about a team acquiring talent and then turning it around right away. Well,
right.
You can say, oh, well, Cleveland did it the second time. Well, they didn't win in the first year. Same with Miami. It took a little bit of time to come together. And even then, it's like, okay, Cleveland, you won once. The Lakers right now, yeah, they won the championship, and you're never going to take that away, but, you know, big picture, it certainly wasn't as successful so far as the seasons in which the Celtics were together. You know what I mean? So this idea that you need a big three, yes, it helps, but how often have we seen it fail?
I think especially lately, you're right. Yeah. And the thing is, I think it all goes back to defense. People forget that defense is important in the NBA. Like Golden State, when they won 3 championships in 4 years, they were a really good defensive team.
Oh, yeah.
Draymond Green, defensive player of the year candidate. Klay Thompson's an elite defender. Durant can defend. Curry is not a really good defender, but he's smart out there, and he seems to get every loose ball somehow. You go back last year, Milwaukee, outstanding defensive team. The year before, the Lakers, outstanding defensive team. Before that, Kawhi and the Raptors, excellent defensive team. So you have to have that component, which the Celtics have. And I think what happens is it depends on how you – building the team. Is it being built organically? Mm-hmm. Like, you could say the Suns have a big three of Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton, but two of those guys were drafted and developed.
Yeah,
and
I wouldn't really.
Guy. Yeah, I mean, Chris Paul's more of a guy who comes in and just makes it work.
Yeah, right? when people say big three, I you know, there's no real true definition of how it should be done. This is just how I personally view it. It's not like if you have, it's like the Golden State Warriors, for example. I mean, they you know, that was talent. Like, you know, people saying, oh, you know, Kevin Durant went to a stacked team, well, or a whatever they were called. It's like, well, it's different. I mean, they were drafted. I mean, they were drafted and developed.
Yep.
Like, I don't call that, like, a big three to me. I'd say, let's put it this way. The current definition of a big three to me is three overpriced veteran players that have a bunch of success, but very little playoff success to go along with it. Because that's essentially what it's what's, you know, you have the, obviously LeBron, you know, grouping with whatever, but you, Anthony Davis, a lot of success, very little playoff success. Well, what happened to Kevin Durant? Same thing. A lot of success, very little playoff success. Well, they got a big three. Well, you know, this, that, I don't know. It's just big three. It's like, okay, that's great. It's good to have, and I'm sure you love it. But we're seeing more and more, especially from smart teams, that you need depth. You need depth. I don't care how many you could have three great players, but if you don't have a Peyton Pritchard who comes in and just gives all of us short white guys hope that maybe one day that we'll be able to do what he does. Yeah, you're not going to win consistently in the NBA, and certainly not in the playoffs, because it's a different animal. You got to win a series, not just a game. So,
and you're going to face injuries. I mean, every team is facing injuries right now. It's incredible. You know, now Kyle Lowry's got a hamstring in Miami, and Joel Embiid's going to play through a thumb injury, and, you know, Chris Middleton's out, and all of this. Devin Booker. You know, so you got all that to deal with. So, yeah, you got to have some players that contribute off the bench. And look at Bruce Brown. Make a case, Bruce Brown's been the best net the last two games.
Oh, easily.
I think he has been. He's the only guy that's like overachieving. And poor Blake Griffin. I mean, he went out there and busted his hump on Saturday night. He didn't have much left in the gas tank, but at least give the guy credit. It looked like he cared.
For three games of the series, every time I saw him for the first time, I was like, I can't believe I forgot Blake Griffin was right. on this team. Yeah. And this was after the night, you know, before I'd said that before. So, it's you need the depth, you need the scoring, you need all that stuff. But, you know, we're looking at it right now. We're seeing a Celtics team that's healthy, especially now with Rob Williams. You have, Ben Simmons, I don't know how hurt he is, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend. Like, I know some people are basically just accusing him of... I'm not going to do that. When you're talking about especially herniated discs in your back, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like the guy's not hurt, but it's just not a good look. I mean, and don't get me wrong, my thing I hope that never dies is people photoshopping Ben Simmons in random locations throughout history in that outfit, because that to me was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. And look, I'm not saying Ben Simmons deserves to absolutely skirt criticism. He deserves it. I mean, let's be honest here. Like, the guy to me, if I'm a Nets fan, if I'm a Nets player, do you have any confidence or any whatever in Ben Simmons at all?
Probably not. The only problem is if one person is going to accuse him is Kyrie Irving, how can you have any confidence in Kyrie Irving who didn't get vaccinated? And that's the biggest
exactly.
So if he's going to start talking about that, they're going to say, Kyrie, shut up.
Yeah.
You know, we're here because of you. If you had played the home games, we'd be a 4 seed or whatever instead of a 7 seed, and we'd be playing Toronto or whatever the matchups would be. Yeah, so it's just a mess there, and I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, are they going to bring in a real coach? Are they going to bring in a friend of Kevin Durant? Who knows what they're going to do in the offseason?
Have the alternative being James Harden, I don't think was much better, because we even said beforehand, it's like, good luck before the season. I mean, we don't talk a lot of basketball, but I do remember sitting here thinking, like, yeah, good luck with that. Nice, cool, big three, but you have three of the biggest absolute egos in the NBA, and you're trying to get them to mesh, and there you go. There's another example. The big three just failed miserably. It didn't even take a season. So
You need one guy out of the big three to understand he's the third guy. Like, so Chris Bosh went to Miami with LeBron to join Dwayne Wade,
Allen.
And he understood, I'm the third guy. Ray Allen coming here. Exactly. That you've got to be, okay, I'm the third guy. Dennis Rodman, when he went to Chicago with Pippen and Jordan. I mean, that was clear that he was the third guy, although they had like four other guys that you could qualify as thirds. They were a loaded team. Ron Harper was a hell of a player, and so was Tony Kukoc. So you have to understand that. You can't have three guys who say, well, I'm the best player on the team. In Kyrie Irving's mind, he's the best player on that team. Obviously, Durant is. Ben Simmons just doesn't seem like he's really into this. So you've got a kind of a weird setup there, and we've yet to see him even play. But yeah, no, I think now you're seeing teams building organically. Like a team like Toronto, which won the championship a couple of years ago, and I think they build their roster probably better than any team in the NBA. They can't really attract free agents, but they went in all in on Kawhi Leonard, and they won a title. You know that, but it was a 1 year deal, and in the last 2 years, Toronto's still been competitive. That's a really good way to do it. Is it nothing better than drafting and developing players? Because you build that, you know, you look at the Celtics and you're like, five of the top eight players were drafted and developed by the Celtics. So it just feels like they feel good to be there. Maybe not, but it seems to work, especially right now it is.
Yeah, and I like that it's working. So, all right, we're going to have to say goodbye for the day. We'll be back throughout the week. Obviously, we got a whole bunch of NFL draft stuff to talk about. And, of course, more of these NBA playoff series are going to be concluding here, with the Celtics having a chance to wrap it up. And, of course, Golden State on the verge of moving on as well in the West. And then we have a couple other closer series, but I'm sure we're going to get a little bit more insight to that tonight and tomorrow. So thank you everyone for tuning in. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Full Press NFL, at FP_coverage, and of course Full Press Radio. Thank you everyone, and we'll talk to you soon.